You're listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. On this half of the program, we hear a conversation I had with Lisa Armeo. She is a retired Montessori teacher, and after a 30-year career teaching in Montessori school, she created the Early Childhood Service Corps. It's a program that recruits older adults to work in preschools. The grant-based program started in 2021 and since then has grown exponentially. Today, she has more than 100 trainees working in preschools across the Front Range, some working as volunteers and others as full-time trained staff, which she refers to as Encore subs. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa, to start, tell us the story of the Early Childhood Service Corps. Where did the idea for this program come from and where did you begin?
Sure. So my background, I'm an early childhood education person. That was my professional background my whole career. I'm a Montessorian, so I was a Montessori head of school for over 30 years in the Denver area. In 2018, I really became, as I started to age, honestly, I was getting a little older and started thinking, what's the next step for me? I've been doing that for 30 years. It just is a strange time in your life after 50, 55. You just start thinking, what, you know, there's expectations of what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to retire after 30, but I don't really want to. And there were just, so I think for me, it was a personal journey of what will life look like as I age. And I'm a fierce advocate. I'm a huge anti-aging advocate. I am very involved in anti-aging media and et cetera, et cetera.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, I was thinking about it just today, actually. So even with children's books, I'll be all over the place, so I apologize. But even in children's literature, when you read a book to a child about an older adult, they're always feeble. They have a walker. They're dottery. There aren't books out there that you can read to little kids about the grandma that bikes 5 miles a day or whatever. And those people exist, but they're just not part of the story of America. We just don't talk about it. And I just, what called on me this morning, and I've been seething about it all day long, is Martha Stewart is the oldest swimsuit model for swimsuit for Sports Illustrated this month. She's 81 years old. And everyone is going on and on about how great she looks and blah, blah, blah. And she's 81 and isn't that great?
Yeah.
And I mean, Dolly Parton and, with so many of these older actresses that are now being held to the standard of what aging should look like.
Yeah.
And it's sort of what we were doing to young girls 15 years ago. We were showing them stick thin blonde girls and saying everybody needs to look like this to be successful. Now the tables have turned and now we're saying to age successfully, you have to look like Jane Fonda. I'm never going to look like Jane Fonda because I don't have the money to have the plastic surgery to create that illusion of aging. It's an illusion of aging. It's not real. And I'm furious that Martha Stewart is getting all this attention for being the oldest person because she's a version of herself that isn't even natural.
Right.
And that it just makes it's hard enough to look in the mirror as you age and start to see aging happen to your body and then to be told that it's not attractive because what you really need to look like is this person is infuriating. It's
yeah.
Like, good Lord, I lived through my 20s and 30s and now you're again, that's the most important. Now in my 60s, I have to worry about that. So that's part of it was just to get back to your original question. Part of it, I think, was just my own quest for my own aging and how I felt about it. And I became familiar with intergenerational programming. And then I flew to Seattle and spent a day at an intergenerational site in Seattle that was bored out of need. They just really needed childcare for the people who worked at their facility. They have an 800 person facility all the way from independent to palliative care for older adults, community in West Seattle. And they started a daycare, a childcare center, and for their staff. And then accidentally 37 years ago, they started to see this amazing intergenerational programming happening. And they started to see that the lives of the adults that were part of their community were bettered by having children there. Mm-hmm. And the interactions with the children and holding a baby and watching a toddler fall down, all those great things that happen that you're completely isolated from when you go into a care community. All of a sudden, the whole world is just old people and caregivers. That is your reality. There is no other reality. And so no wonder people go downhill so quickly when that's their only reality. And just introducing children into this turned that equation on its head. So I went to visit them, and I originally formed the nonprofit that Early Childhood Service Corps is underneath. It's called the Montessori Intergenerational Learning. I call it MELC for short. And I started that nonprofit in 2018 with the idea of starting a Montessori school that was 0 to 5 and doing Montessori programming for aging and dementia. I'm also certified in Montessori care for older adults with dementia and Alzheimer's using Montessori. And the idea was to meld those two programs together, have the children work on Montessori work, which happens to be the same work we work with adults with dementia. And I was doing, right before the pandemic, I was working with a Montessori school and a memory care facility, and we were taking the kids to the memory care. And we were gathering data to see if it was safe, to see if it would work. And it was unbelievably, it worked.
Okay, so just a quick recap. You were working in a memory care facility with people suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia, and you were experimenting with what would happen if you brought these two groups, preschool age children and dementia patients together. The program was called Montessori Intergenerational Learning Community. You refer to it as MILC. And you were collecting data and finding that this pairing really worked. What do you mean by worked? What kind of data were you collecting?
Yeah, we were collecting data from the families of the children to just really anecdotal data about, are they happier? Are they talking about the older adults? Are they forming relationships with the older adults? Do they look forward to the days they get to go be with the older adult? Like that sort of stuff, talking to the teachers, gathering data about if the children were talking to them about the older adult they were partnered with and what were. And these are little kids, 3, 4, and 5 year olds, but they would be so excited. And, you know, tomorrow when I go see Grandpa Jim, I want to take the pink tower or whatever work it was. And they would pre-think about it. And then with the care facility, Montessori for Aging and Dementia has actual data points that the care facility fills out for us that reports on if they're all sorts of mental and physical health, like is their dexterity improvements, their wound improving, or they need less food drugs, are they sleeping better? So it's actual data that we, and all of them, all of the people in the study that were working with the kids had improved mental, social, and physical well-being scores. They had higher scores in those areas than before they started working with the kids, 100%, all of them.
And how often was this work happening?
We were taking the kids over twice a week is all.
Wow. So not even that much.
Not even that much. One morning, twice a week. It was so successful. It was successful for the kids. It was successful for the older adults. It was successful for staff. And then the pandemic came and it made it impossible to get older adults together with kids, it really in any way, and especially with vulnerable adults with memory loss. And so I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And I knew I wanted to do something intergenerational. And there was a nonprofit in Denver at the time called Boomers Leading Change. I knew of them. They were a nonprofit that recruited older adults, gave them training in different things, and then they would send them out as ambassadors to work in those communities as volunteers. And they had a really robust training and recruiting program. Long story short, I got a job with them as their early childhood program director to see if it would work. We did a feasibility study. About 45% of retirees said that they would be interested in working with young kids. And this was prior to the pandemic. And then when I just started developing this program during the pandemic, and the first thing I did was recruit retired business people and then paired them with early childhood centers that were really struggling during the pandemic financially to get free business advice. So that's sort of how the program started during the pandemic, because I could do it all virtually. Kids weren't really in child care centers at the time because of lockdown, but child care centers were hemorrhaging money. And that was super successful. People responded to volunteer. Sites responded to getting the free help. And since January 2021, I've been building out the program through MELC and developed the whole training program, all the coursework that everybody has to take, developed my relationship with University of Colorado Denver to provide the ECU 101 and 103 training, hired the folks to do that training. So we built all that out, and we've just been growing it one person at a time. We're on our fourth cohort. We tripled our numbers for our second cohort. They stayed tripled for our third, and we're about to quadruple those numbers for our fourth cohort. So there's a lot of interest for sure.
You're listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Today, I'm speaking with Lisa Armeo. She is the founder of Early Childhood Service Corps, a nonprofit that trains older adults and places them in preschools across Colorado. Lisa, so you started your program experimenting with this idea of pairing together older adults with dementia and preschool-aged children. That original program expanded eventually to include any older adults and pairing them with preschool-aged children. I'm curious if you can maybe explain to us what makes this relationship between older adults and preschool-aged children so successful and so nourishing, really, to both of the parties.
I want to point that out, that, you know, this isn't a cure for everyone. It's not everybody's happy place. It's definitely my happy place. When I go out to eat, I always sit, if there's a child, I sit at a vantage point so I can see the child. My husband's always like, are you out to dinner with me or with them? And I'm like, well, them. Because it's just, they've always made me happy. And for people that, so I hear a number of things. I hear that people are intrigued by the idea. They're intrigued that somebody has thought of this, exactly what you said in the beginning, that there's all these people that are feeling sort of disenfranchised and isolated, who want to do something good. And then there's someone saying, hey, you can actually do something good with children. So most of them are very curious. They come with this sort of open curiosity. Most of them are bored. They feel isolated, lonely, lack of purpose, lack of meaning, lack of efficacy. There's something about, as you grow older, people care less and less about your opinion. They care less and less about talking to you. I mean, it's just really odd. I cannot explain it other than you just slowly disappear. I mean, I've seen it in my own life. You just slowly disappear. People talk to you less, your opinion is valued less. And it just starts to get to you. It doesn't matter who you are, you just start to notice it. And as soon as you start working with children, especially children under 5, that's gone for them. They don't have it. They're always excited to see you. They don't care if you're old. They don't care if you have gray hair. They don't care if you have wrinkles. They don't care what you did in your past career. They could care less. You could have been the CEO of Disney. It doesn't matter to them. You're just this person who's getting down to their level and spending time with them and encouraging them to be the best little humans they can be. And for a kid, that's all you need. So it's just instantaneous acceptance. And we feel seen again. Children see older adults. They see us. We're not invisible. And I think that's what it is. I think as soon they learn about how important it is and what a difference, you know, a child that has exposure to positive experiences before the age of 5 has a period, a better normal trajectory for the rest of their life. It's a fact.
Actually, can you tell me more about that? What do you mean that a child who has positive learning experiences before the age of 5 has a better trajectory of learning for the rest of their lives?
A child that has positive learning experiences and social emotional experiences before the age of 5 have a more positive learning trajectory for the rest of their life. It's fact. It's just true.
And what do you mean by positive?
So if you have a lot of adverse childhood experiences, that's called your ACE score. If you have a lot of those that stack up before you're 5, if you experience trauma, if you are exposed to great music, literature, reading, just exposed to nature and life and all the things that a good early childhood program does, you don't form as many synapses in your brain as the child next to you that actually has those experiences. Your brain literally doesn't develop the same. Mm. It truly doesn't develop the same. So I tell the folks that come to my information sessions that you know, instead of stop these little guys that don't have those positive learning experiences before the age of five, that's not part of their foundation. They sort of start at kindergarten real quick, say. They're, you know, socially, they're not with their peers. Intellectually, they're not with their peers. Behaviorally, they're not with their peers. And they just sort of start out their whole educational career on quicksand. These children who have had all this positive quality interaction, and it can look different. It can look like Montessori. It can look like nature preschools. It can look like STEM Academy. It can look different. It doesn't have to be cookie cutter. It just needs to be rich and positive and really respectful to children. And they need to have positive relationships with adults that are members of their family. And when those things happen, they start out on really solid, like, concrete for their learning experience. And there's just a huge difference. And there is no way to make it up. It doesn't mean that those children can't work hard and make it up. They will. But there's no easy way to, you can't go back in and redo those 0 to 5 years. You just can't. Yeah. And so most of the time when older adults hear about that and hear about the number one thing that you can do for a child under five is form a positive relationship with them. Yeah. That's really what early childhood is about. And when they hear that, and they understand that I'm going to give them the training so that they're going to feel confident that they're creating positive learning experiences, they're all in. I mean, if I do today, I did an info session. I had 4 people on it. And 3 people from that 4 have signed up. And that's pretty typical. If I have 15, usually about 12 sign up.
Hmm.
Because they're just excited about being able to learn something new and then go out in the world and do something. I think it's just empowering after the age of 50 to be able to change course like that.
I think that when you age, I think and I've obviously never retired before, but it seems like people start to feel like I'm not a first pick, you know, like I'm not uniquely better than someone who's younger than me. And in this position, they could bring something that's uniquely valuable with their age. It makes them more of an asset and it more important. Do you see that? Is that part?
I see it all the time. And the thing that I didn't see coming and that's been just this great gift, I knew that the children would love them and accept them and that there would be positive relationships. I just knew it. I'm the baby of 8 children. So my sisters are 20, 24 years older than I am. And so, you know, when they were aging and I would watch them even with my own children, and there's just a connection with those, with young kids and older adults. There just is. So I knew that would happen. But what I didn't really count on, and what a lot of the encore staffs have been reporting to me, is that they're becoming part of the family unit. The parents are coming to them and thanking them for their service and know them and then asking advice about things, because maybe you really need some sage advice, but you don't have a close relationship with your mom or your grandma. But then there's this encore sub who loves your kid that you can ask these questions to. And so there's this incredible that I didn't anticipate happening. So it's not just a connection between the youngest and the oldest, but it's a connection between the youngest, oldest, and everybody in between, the staff, the family. You know, it's really, really hard to raise children. It's so hard to raise children. And if you don't have a supportive network around you, if you're a single mom, single dad, you don't have the family support, and then all of a sudden there's somebody in your kid's life that's your dad's age, and he wants to help and be part of your child's life and your life, I'm just hearing that's such a positive part of this program that I just didn't see that part coming. And I'm so pleased. I hear from directors that younger staff love the fact that they can be the expert on early childhood. So say I had a retired lawyer who takes my coursework. She brought subbing. She doesn't really know a lot about early childhood, but she's a retired lawyer. She's a really smart lady. And she's working with a younger 20-something that knows early childhood, because that's what their degree role, but doesn't have a lot of life experience. And they're able to do this lovely co-mentoring change that surprised me. I just didn't see that piece coming. That's really happy. Most of the people that come were professionals in their career. And a lot of them said to me, and it's always really, it always choked me up because they say, especially the men, but some of the women too, say, I wasn't that involved in raising my own kid because I was so busy with my career, making money, supporting my family. You know, I was so busy working that I left the child rearing to someone else and I missed it. And now it's clear to me what I missed. And I can't get it back with my kid. A lot of people say I don't have grandchildren. My kids aren't going to have kids. I'm never going to be a grandparent. And so I want to get it with other people's kids. I want to be able to experience that wonder and joy that you only be seeing that 0 to 5 year old firsthand. That's kind of why they do it, I think. And I think they also, because we offer a cohort model. So you're part of that cohort from now until eternity if you are to be. And we meet every 3 months or so and talk about how is it going in the field and how's it going in your life. And we've created these little small micro communities for these older adults. And I know that they get together on their own. I know that there's been friendships formed and little book clubs formed to learn about early childhood. And it's sort of taken a life on of its own. And I think that's been really important post pandemic to give people an outlet, that avenue of meeting like-minded people that maybe weren't like-minded before because they had totally different careers, but now they're all united in this, I want to learn about early childhood stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting because it seems like it's like a bridge to a type of community that Americans don't really have. Like we have this nuclear family and it feels a lot of people, I think, feel like, well, if my nuclear family doesn't look a certain way, we feel like we missed out. That's it. And I like this idea because it's kind of loosening those things that we set up for ourselves about success and failure and life experiences. It's pushing those boundaries.
Absolutely. And that was a huge goal of mine to do. You know, there's a ton of 55 plus communities springing up all over the place. And when I went to Tennessee, I was visiting my father-in-law and they just purchased a place in a 55 community and it's beautiful and whatever, do you, if that's what makes you happy. But kids literally were not allowed there. They're not allowed in the community. The adults who live there like it, they don't like the noise and the nonsense of the children and all that. And my mother-in-law said to me, you know, you guys could actually do this. And I laughed and I said, this would never be my choice because I live across the street from a junior high and it is mayhem at drop off and pickup. Literal mayhem. They're screaming, they're loud, I love it. Like that's what life is to me, right? Down the street, I have a Montessori school and the little toddlers walk the rope. They take walks around the neighborhood and they hold on to a rope. Hilarious. That makes my day. Every time they go for a walk, I'm so excited. Life to me is all the different people, all the different colors, all the different ages, all the different gender expressions. All that to me is life. So I don't want to segregate myself from that. Right. And I think a lot of older adults who don't want to be segregated from that. But as you pointed out earlier, it's just sort of how we do things here.
Yeah.
It's just sort of how we do it. Mike, one of my encore subs from the cohort with Teresa, told me that he's never gotten so many invitations to birthday parties because all the kids, he goes, I have 60 new best friends. Yeah. They're all four and they all invite me to their birthday party. It's the most popular I've ever been in my life. I mean, what could be that?
Yeah. So one thing you emphasize in your coursework when you're training older adults to get their early childhood education license is that you tell people that they should never talk to kids in a baby voice. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Early childhood education is so over the board. There's about as many philosophies and, you know, pedagogies and ways to do early childhood as, I mean, it's sort of nuts. There's Emilio Regio and Montessori and Playbase and STEM, and there's all these different thoughts and all of them are fine, and it's really more preference. So for me, because I feel very strongly that every relationship comes from a place of respect. I don't care if it's with a brand new infant baby or a 95-year-old person with dementia. I speak to those people exactly the same way. I noticed when I started doing work in older adult care with people with dementia and Alzheimer's, guess what we do? We start talking to them like they're babies again. And we get this real squeaky, disrespectful, nasty voice with them and infantilize them. They're ill. They have a disease in their brain. And it just infuriated me. I thought, Here I am again. I've spent all this time trying to get people to not talk to babies that way. And now I've got to get people to not talk to older adults that way. I mean, heaven's sake, don't call me sweetie at the grocery store because I have gray hair. Are you kidding me? So I don't call children sweetie, love bug, any of that. I call them their name. I believe that children deserve our respect. And I think part of that comes from the tone of voice that we use when we speak to them.
Yeah.
And young children are learning to speak. And the way they learn to speak is by watching your mouth, listening to the tone of your voice, and watching how do you form words. If you're doing that, this crazy, high, squeaky Disney voice, what doesn't make sense? So when I meet a baby, I introduce a baby, tiny infant. I introduce myself. I say how lovely it is to meet them. I tell them that they have a lovely name or whatever. And when you do that, you're giving children language. You're giving them agency over their body because somebody's saying to you, I need to pick you up now to help you with this. As they get older with the toddler, I ask permission. I ask a toddler, unless they're in a dangerous situation. But in every other situation, I say, can I touch your body now? Can I pick you up? I'm not just going to hurl myself at another individual. I don't care how old they are. So that is the reason that we have chosen to use that language in our coursework is to just really emphasize respect and equality when we're speaking to children. And then I think that the coursework that we designed, I didn't want them to feel like an intro class because these people have 30, 40, 50 years of professional experience in something. So I didn't want them to feel talked down to. And so we really worked hard on developing the curriculum in a way that I felt was really respectful to the older adults while teaching respect of younger kids at the same time. We just had our first in-person gathering 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And we had all the cohorts come. It was fun. It was the first time I'd met pretty much anybody in person. And just hearing them talk to each other and tell the stories about how they got involved and what differences it's made in their lives. And there wasn't one person, it was very well attended. And there wasn't one person there who didn't have at least one story of transformation. I just hear it all the time. It's sort of crazy. In the beginning, I would get real emotional and run out and tell my husband, oh my gosh. And now I'm realizing that it happens all the time. Like it just literally happens all the time.
Lisa Armeo is the founder of Early Childhood Service Corps, a nonprofit that trains older adults in early childhood education and then places them into preschools across the Front Range as volunteers and as paid teachers. Lisa, thank you so much for talking with me. I've really enjoyed it.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon.